It's my pick, everybody. So welcome to 80s Horror Podcast. I am your host, Becca, with my lovely co-host, Jonathan Moody.
Hey, thank you for calling me lovely.
Yes. So this is my month to pick. And I said, well, one of my picks was The Thing. And I said, well, let's do that because, you know, we're getting to the end of winter and everything. We're going to be wanting to do summer movies. And now I'm sitting here with the windows open. It's 70 degrees and sunny. But that's okay because we were just having this discussion that movies don't have to be watched in their time of reference. So you don't have to watch summer movies in summer and Christmas movies at Christmas and Thanksgiving movies in November. You can watch things whenever you want. So
absolutely.
So yes.
The Thing is definitely a movie you can watch anytime.
And I will say the reason why I picked it too is because when it is really snowy, like when I'm almost snowed in, like I really like to watch it. And I think I just watched it when we picked. But yeah, who cares? Whatever. 1982. So I'm branching out. Finally, I picked something that wasn't from 1981.
That's my birth year.
Oh, is it really?
I was born and this movie was made.
Aw, how sweet. I was born the year Carrie came out. That tells you.
Nice. That's actually awesome. Yeah. That's a classic. 70s, right? Like that's
1976.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't trying to like bring up your name.
It's okay. Yeah. Anyone can IMDb it. But I picked this because it's a classic. This is a movie that I've seen several times. Every time I see it, I love it more. Semi-recently, I'd say about 4 years ago, actually watched this in a theater, which I had never done. I've seen it at a drive-in. I've seen it at home, you know, with surround sound and everything, but I saw it in a theater. And you cannot, if you've never seen it in a theater and you have the opportunity, do it, because the sound design in this is so amazing. The way that the wind and the Arctic air just kind of envelops you when you're in the theater, and it really adds to the isolation. So that's just my own little plug for watching it in the theater, but even watching it at home, it's still pretty awesome.
Well, I watched it with my Blu-ray. I've got my nice Blu-ray here. I was in my living room. I've got a stereo surround sound, so I put that on. Originally I wasn't going to, but then I was like, you know what, this definitely had, like, it would add to the atmosphere of the movie. Mm-hmm. So and I had watched it, like, I think last year, the year before, maybe it was the year before, we had done The Thing for Hollywood Boulevard podcast, and some of the people were on there for that, and so I'd seen it again there. And this is probably like my third or fourth time. Like I never got into it when I was younger, you know. I didn't get into it till like recently, and especially all of John Carpenter's stuff. But this is one of my favorites up there, you know, and it just keeps getting, like, The Fog, this just keeps getting better and better.
So I guess we should just get into it. So it is worth noting that this is a remake, that a lot of people don't know that. It is a remake of a movie from 1951 called The Thing from Outer Space, which kind of, some people say, kind of started the whole sci-fi monster movie craze of the 50s. And I had never seen that. And it's famously the movie that Tommy and Lindsay are watching on Halloween, in Halloween. Yeah. And John Carpenter says it's one of his favorite movies. I hadn't seen it. And maybe about, again, 4 or 5 years ago, I saw it at the drive-in. And it's a really good movie. Like, not in that cheesy 50s sci-fi way. It's actually really solid. The dialogue is really good. In that one, they actually have a woman that comes with them, and she and the main guy have this banter that's so entertaining. But that one takes place in, well, they're in Alaska, and they go to a remote outpost in the Arctic. So that was still pretty, you know, that was still pretty unexplored at that point in time. I'm not so much anymore. I did have the Northern Lights going on there. I went to college in Alaska, by the way.
Oh, wow. Did not know that.
Yeah. So we did not explore any outposts with alien life forms. So this one, to add to the modern times, they had to move it to Antarctica.
Why do you think they did that?
Because I think you just couldn't do that with Alaska. They're just, it's not cut off anymore. The northern part is pretty, I mean, you can get places, you know, there's phones, internet, whatnot. I mean, okay, in 1982, there wasn't. But I mean, you know, it was pretty well populated. Antarctica is about the last place that is really sealed off.
Okay.
Which I thought was a good, you know, a good choice. I happened to look this up today. By the way, if you go to IMDb and you look at the trivia on this, there are probably hundreds of trivia things.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
It's crazy. But I wanted to look it up today because I kind of thought it was weird that they don't seem to be doing anything, and I never really questioned it. So the little bit of research that I did is, for those outposts in Antarctica, like for real, they do their stuff mostly in the milder months. So that's when the scientists are usually down there. Whoever is there during the really brutal months, like in this movie, they're usually kind of a skeleton crew of like caretakers. And so that's what these guys would have been, taking care of the equipment, the dogs, you know, a helicopter pilot, you know, to keep everybody there, radio operator, whatever. And I read that John Carpenter wrote each one of them because he wanted them to each seem like they were running away from something in the outside world. Like this was the place they needed to be. It was just somewhere just cut off from society.
Did you get that? Did you get that when you were watching it? Because I didn't.
I did for some of them, but not all of them. It would take a very special kind of person to be able to tolerate that. You know, knowing that you wouldn't be able to talk to people. I mean, the radio operator, he's like, yeah, I haven't heard from anyone in like 3 weeks. Like there's, I mean, that would take an extreme, I don't know what you would even call it, but I mean, that's a lot of mental, I don't know. I can't imagine that. I always have this look on my face when I talk about the thing, because it creeps me out, the whole being cut off, being isolated, and being with these people who all seem to be edgy in their own way. They all have conflicting personalities, which adds to it, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Like, I don't know. It does make you feel sort of claustrophobic at times that when you're watching it, because you're sort of just seeing the area that they're at, right? You know, and you're just kind of like enclosed in that one little, I don't know, what it was, the station.
It's like, yeah, it's like their outpost, like a research station. Yeah. And what's funny is that it's like, you say isolation, but it's like this one little dot. And then they're just, you know, nothing for miles. So it's almost the opposite of isolation. Like they're just, it's like, as far as you can see that, you know, they've
desolation,
got rain
of it. Is that the
desolation
word?
Desolation. There we go. But what I like is when they're in their rec room, like it seems very comfortable and cozy and they seem to be doing normal things. And, you know, he's playing that stupid chess game. And
oh, she got really mad at, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. You don't destroy your game, you know, like.
I know. Like
if it's been, season, dude.
He's like, you know what? Fuck this game.
Yeah.
You know, you cheated. You know, right, whatever.
But it's kind of like that whole thing that they're like all holed up in this little cozy little pocket and not knowing what's out there.
Yeah.
Which is the theme of a lot of movies that I like.
Honestly. Yeah, I like that. Like, it made me feel so, I don't know, like, it's sort of like, I think they even talk about sort of how, you know, they're just why don't they just die, you know, because like, you know what I mean, like they're out there in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. You know, it's not like, you know, nobody's gonna come, you know, the rescue team will come for them at the end, supposedly, right? So I mean, I don't know, it's such a strange sort of time.
Yeah, it's just a weird feeling that I don't think anybody can really, I can totally identify with. Like, I can't imagine, having to keep my survival like that. Mm. Like, if their generators go out, they're dead. I mean, there's no, hey, let's get in the, you know, let's get in the helicopter and go to the next outpost. No, if there's a snowstorm, they've got no gas, you know, they have a huge fire, they're dead.
Right.
So they already have that looming danger that they have to live with all the time. And then, well, danger comes to them.
In the form of a dog, you know, which...
Oh. Go ahead. I mean,
okay, like, so I always have a problem with the dog stuff, obviously. I think we've talked about this on many occasions, but I don't like, you know, animals where dogs are hurt. But, like, I mean, in this situation, I don't even know how I feel necessarily. Like, when they're trying to shoot the dog, I'm just like, you know, they could try to kill a dog anyway, but I guess fire is the only way to kill it, period. You know, so if they shot that dog, the dog would still be the thing. You know,
yeah.
The thing would just, you know, I guess would just find some other host, you know, or whatever. And it tries to with the other dogs, and that we'll get into that scene, I guess, later. Yeah. But like, Jesus, you know, like, I just kind of felt sorry for the dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're like trapped and they're like, hey, motherfuckers, this other dog, like, did you not just realize that you let in some kind of stranger? Like, but I did look this up because I'd never really looked up exactly, but, spoiler alert, you know, we're talking spoilers, yeah. But, if anybody there had spoken Norwegian, then the movie would have been over in 10 minutes. And so I looked it up. So the Norwegian guy, and of course, this is not in, he's probably an American actor doing Norwegian, but what he's saying in Norwegian to them is this, he says, get the hell out of there. That's not a dog. It's some sort of thing. It's imitating a dog. It isn't real. Get away, you idiots. So had anyone known any Norwegian, they would have been like, okay.
Well, remember, just
knowing English, which seems weird that they didn't know any English. But.
Yeah, especially since they were not too far from the other outpost, you know, or whatever. I mean, they were a little far, but like they should have known, like, you know, like, this is an American.
Generally speaking, though, I mean, generally speaking, Europeans tend to know some English.
You know, English more than we know, you know,
their language, right?
Any other
their languages, right?
I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't even really know Spanish, you know, myself. No. And now I feel like I always kind of feel like a dumbass because, you know, like just that's this simplest language and I don't even know it. And other people know our language and they're from like every other country in the world.
Yeah. We're stupid Americans.
That's what they call us. So, well, you know, McCready, the whole time he keeps saying Swedes. Like those damn
close
Swedes.
Enough.
I guess that's what he keeps thinking. Like,
yeah.
And they keep correcting him and he just keeps doing it. And it's just the funniest thing. Like, it's like almost like a recurring joke that, you know, that he's just like, fuck it. You know, call him Swedes, you know. He was by far my favorite character in the whole movie.
Right. I mean, and if he isn't, if you're like, oh yeah, the cook was my, like, I can't even think of his name. Like, if anybody else is your favorite character, I mean, more power to you, but I mean, McCready is the shit in this movie. He is a damaged person. He is, drinking a lot of J&B whiskey, by the way. That started, one of my favorite hobbies. So a friend of mine, Charlie Hours, had noticed a lot of movies from the 70s and 80s featured J&B whiskey. And so he made a list on Letterboxd, and The Thing was the first one that he noticed it in. And so we started cataloging all the movies where we saw J&B whiskey, and there are a million. Oh. And now we have that. We have a list on Letterboxd for movies with that bank teller lamp, that green desk lamp. Okay. That's so much movies with the peacock chair, that big wicker chair that like goes above people, like a wicker throne.
Oh yeah.
Movies where people in a wheelchair are taken advantage of or treated badly. Movies with that cat that cat clock, the little black cat clock where the tail goes back and forth and the eyes go back and forth. Yeah. So that's like become one of my favorite hobbies. Oh, and movies where the boom mic shows up in the shot.
Those are fun.
I recently found a movie that in the same shot, there was a billboard for J&B whiskey and the boom mic was in the shot. I was like, boom.
So, you know, in LA, I don't know if you know this, but in LA, they say, if you want to be a person who like lives in LA, there are like seven things you have to find, you know, you have to see, but you don't like look for them. They just, you know, if you see them, you see them. You know, and one of them's like a burning palm tree. Another person's another thing's like a person walking their dog in a stroller and, you know, stuff like that. But you see in LA, you know, but
like a bingo card kind of thing.
Yeah. And if you see all seven of them, you are a Los Angelian, you know, or whatever. I don't think I saw any of them. I didn't even see the burning palm tree, which I've heard is like the easiest one to see. So I'm kind of upset. I think maybe next time I move out there, maybe I'll see all of them and I can say, all right, that means I can't leave. I'm stuck.
You know what it was though? You were looking for them and that's exactly it.
I think that's it. I think I was looking for them.
After they have to come to you.
Right. And maybe Los Angeles was just not ready for me or whatever. It may be. I don't know. But anyway, what I do know is I was, part of, you know, like that's one of the things. And so maybe your thing, you know, maybe if you see all of those things, you're a
I keep waiting. Like I watch a lot of riff tracks and they watch a lot of 70s exploitation, which is I love those movies. And like I'll watch a movie going, oh my god, this is definitely gonna at least have the boom mic, the J&B, the desk lamp, and the peacock chair. Like, I feel like I'm playing Clue or something. Like, I'm collecting these things. I've yet to find one that has four in it yet, though.
Four in it? Okay.
That's my, like, holy grail.
Four. If you find three of them, it's tic-tac-toe.
No, yeah, true.
Yeah, but four is a good number. Four's a good bingo. I like that.
Four's bingo. Four's bingo with the free space.
Yeah. So there you go.
Anywho, yes, so... McCready drinks a lot of J&B. I don't know where the hell they store all of their food and stuff. That's one of the things I always try to look for. I know we don't see the entire outpost and there is stuff underground we find out later, but like, where are they storing a winter's worth of food, medicine, everything else for this amount of people? Like it doesn't equate to me. Like they're clearing out the storage room and it's like the size of like my storage barn, you know. Like okay.
I agree. I don't know. You see, that's the thing. When you watch a movie with Paul, you know, he'll point out the stuff in the background, you know, and be like, why does that person, it's usually in the indie films where they do their own set direction or they set design or they have somebody or they're at somebody's grandma's house or something.
Right.
And like, you see all the weird shit in the background, but they don't ever move it. Don't ever change it. They just keep it like that. Mainly because like, I'm sorry, but if you're shooting at somebody's grandma's house, you generally don't want to move stuff because without her permission, you know, or whatever. Yeah. So you just say, you know, fuck it, let's just keep it there. And then it looks weird or whatever. Like, why is there that clock in the background with the cat on
right.
it, you know, or right. whatever.
But in a lower budget movie, you might notice them, but you're like, oh, look, somebody's kid left their Legos sitting, right. you know, whatever. But in a bigger budget movie, yeah, you can't help but like question some of these things.
Well, and okay. So I did read that, like, this was like John Carpenter's like first like Hollywood production, you know, right. Universal. He was so used to low budget horror films and stuff that he didn't, you know, like this was a big one for him. I mean, it's probably a smaller budget than what Universal's usually does, you know, period, but like this was a big production. So for him to kind of go off and do this was amazing. Like he had probably a good team of people. But
definitely had a great effects crew.
Yeah, Rob Bottin.
Rob Bottin, yeah. hey, Rob's in outer space. Hey,
there's another Rob Mello.
It's crazy. You were like floating in space like you're an astronaut. Whoa.
Whoa. He just pops
That's
up.
Freaky.
His head just pops in. We talked. So the last movie that you did was American Werewolf in London. And, Rick Baker did the effects for that. And he was doing the effects for The Howling. And he actually left The Howling and gave it to Rob Bottin to continue and everything, because he had promised to work on American Werewolf in London instead. And he didn't want to, he couldn't do both, I guess, just because, I guess, contracts or whatever kind of thing. And so Rob Bottin, from what I've understood, actually wanted to meet with John Carpenter. He like was a fan, you know, and so he met, and this is why I read, oh, not read, but I heard. So he met Dean Cundey on the set of Rock and Roll High School. And he said, you work with John Carpenter a lot. Can you arrange a meeting with me? You know? And so he did. And he talked to, he had a little interview and he said, do you have any parts for me? Like that I can act in? I really want to be like, you know, the killer in a mask kind of thing. And John Carpenter said, yes, I do. And it was for The Fog. And he got to play Blake in The Fog. Nice. And after that, they worked together on this, you know, like doing the effects and everything. And the effects,
they're amazing. I guess maybe that's my contribution to this season is effects powerhouses.
Yeah, you did pick a good amount of like effects driven movies. I think I picked more funny, goofy sort of, and that's sort of what I am anyway. Like I'm into effects, but not as much as probably you are, you know.
No, not really. But these two, I mean, practical effects, I love them. And this one delivers. It's just amazing when the dog starts to turn and they manage to freeze it like in the middle of its, you know, transformation. Right. That's just so disgusting. And and I guess all the like the autopsy scene, they used real animal organs.
Did they?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it was like butcher shop kind of
thing. I know, but still, right. It's still sad, you know, to like know that that was real stuff, you know, not, yeah, not like, you know,
I guess Wilford Brimley was the only one who didn't get grossed out by any of that.
Well, at first, okay, so he's done the autopsy at one point, and I literally thought he was not wearing gloves, you know, and I was like, ew, that was gross.
Come
and
on, then buddy.
The next scene, I see he's wearing gloves, and I'm like, okay, maybe I just missed it, you know, or whatever. Maybe I just thought, because they do kind of look like his hands, the gloves or whatever.
Yeah, that's just gross.
Yeah, I cannot imagine actually touching any of that shit without gloves on, you know, or whatever.
No.
Wilford Brimley, man, he was actually at a horror convention recently before he passed away.
Yeah.
obviously. unless his ghost has just showed up to horror conventions, I don't know. But anyway, he was at Scares I Care, so I didn't I saw him like sitting down or whatever, but I never got a chance to meet him. And I think he had a problem at one point when he was supposed to be there, so I think he came in later, you know, because he was having issues, you know. So I don't know, it kind of sucks because
R.I.P.
I know, we miss him. He was great in this movie. But I'm so used to him with the beard, you know, with him shaved, he just looks so strange to me.
Yeah, he looks different.
And I almost didn't like it.
Yeah. You know? And he always looked old, even with the shaved face. I mean, people have talked about this for years. He looked old when he was young. I mean, he was in his 50s in the 80s, you know, like he was not an old guy in this movie, but he looked like one.
Yeah, you look like an older gentleman.
But know. On the other end of the spectrum, Rob Bottin, we should mention, was 21 when he did this movie.
Oh, wow.
Which is another very amazing thing. Maybe it takes the stupidity of youth to take a job like this. Stan Winston came in for some of it to help him out because they were overworked and exhausted. But it was pretty much his crew. Yeah, I think Stan Winston, I don't know that he even gets credited, but he did all the stuff in the dog kennels.
Oh, that actually, I can see that, you know, honestly, now that you say that, it does seem like very Stan Winston-y, you know, if that's that's an adjective or whatever.
Yeah,
or,
sure.
Sure.
I'll accept that.
Yeah, everybody should, you know, like that. Those are the goals, to be like Rick Baker-y or Stan Winston-y, you know, and sadly, Rob Bottin doesn't get the same, like you and I know who he is and maybe a few others, but he doesn't get the same, you know, I feel like him and there's a few others who are amazing, effects people who just don't, you know, who don't get talked about as much.
I think it comes down to how they marketed themselves. Like Greg Nicotero, for example. I mean,
yeah, KMB.
You know, KMB, and he, you know, he's the one that's out there a lot of the time. Is there a reason why he should be, you know, any more well known than Rob Bottin? Probably not. But
well, I mean, and I guess it also depends on what they did, right? Like KMB. They did a lot of different stuff, but like one of the things that really got them famous was From Dusk Till Dawn, you know? And so that movie sort of helped KMB and helped Greg Nicotero. And then he was able to kind of use his name, you know, to get, he's on The Walking Dead, right?
Like, yeah. He's the one that he's like a producer and, you know, does all the effects, or at least is the supervisor for the effects. So
yeah.
Hey, it's all lightning in a bottle. Sometimes there's no reason why one person is, you know, the top of their game and never hear from them. And some people really shouldn't get any accolades and they do. So,
you know, but you know, there are people still like Tom Savini who, I mean, he's sort of, you know, the biggest, you know, probably one of the biggest names in, you know, special effects horror makeup, you know, and everything. Has a whole school, you know, from him, you know, like that's amazing. And so there's some great ones, but Rob definitely, I mean, just the stuff, man. It's seared in my head right now because I just watched it. So it's just like, it's there. I can see all of the nasty, like, look of all the characters, you know?
And the fact that he's not making a thing. He didn't make a creature. It's a thing that you don't really, it's the thing that you don't really see. It's what it does to the people and animals it inhabits. And that's what makes it a little bit more, I don't know, unusual and unique. I mean, it's not like, what does the werewolf look like? What did your zombies look like? What does it look like when this kind of unseen force takes over? And I think that's where it all comes down. Like, I mean, and just the replication and the idea that like something could get into you. I mean, this is another, you know, this is kind of going past effects, but going more towards the psychological part.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it could get into you and you would not know it. And that's when it starts getting really intense. Just the whole thing, people are like questioning themselves, questioning each other. And they're like, I know I'm not. Well, as far as they know, they're not, but they wouldn't know if they were.
Well, okay. So yeah, no. And I agree 100% with that. And I also want to add that, how do we know that the people or whatever the thing, you know, and the person that the thing inhabits doesn't actually know it really is, you know? And that was a big, you know, quote unquote thing with it, is the fact that when they're doing the test to see, you know, what the, you know, burning the blood and everything, which is gosh, fucking fantastic scene, like probably one of the best scenes in the whole movie. He burns, like he'll burn the blood, and then the people just kind of like, you know, one guy was like, right? Because he didn't know whether or not he is. However, he should have thought to himself, well, I'm pretty sure I know I'm not, right?
So, right, but I think that's all what they were starting to realize is like, well, I don't think I am, but
right.
Do I really know?
Right. So yeah. Like the one person that got it, that it became, I forgot who it was, what character it was, but when they got, you know, whatever, got burned, and all of a sudden the things start flying off and, you know, they start shaking, it becomes, you know, it starts coming out and everything, which was, and they're like all stuck inside the
yes, and they're like, know, yeah, they're chairs. Tied like, to the chairs.
Get me out of here, I'm gonna get killed.
Come on, bastard, I passed.
Yeah, well, no, actually, those guys hadn't passed yet, and so they were still that's stuck true. In there right that's next true. To them. Like it was going down the line, and they were gonna do mm-hmm. the one guy last, who they thought was, and I hadn't seen it in like almost a year and a half or something. So I like totally forgot, which was great, because it mm-hmm. it still was a mystery of like, oh, which one, you know, oh, is Gary the one who actually is one too? Is he one as well? Or
yeah,
you know, but I kind of felt bad. I know Clark tried to attack MacReady, and MacReady shot him, you know, right? And everything. I think it was Clark. It was Richard Mazur's character, and then you find out that he wasn't a thing, you know.
Yeah.
Either of them weren't things, so they were like, you're a murderer, and I'm like, the dude like ran at him to attack him, like,
right, like I mean, it's self-defense at that point. Yeah.
And if he didn't run at him like that, the dude would have been alive, you know, or whatever, because yeah. they would have done the thing. So like he was just protecting himself and protecting everybody else. So I didn't find him to be like that bad. So my big question was, I forgot, cause I didn't see it or something, or wasn't paying attention, but did MacReady take the test at all?
He did not. Oh, now. Oh, that's funny.
Was he? Maybe,
I don't remember. That's kind of funny. Are we both having like a brain fart Mandela effect thing? Like, I feel like he didn't.
I don't think he did, which would mean that maybe he was a thing.
There's some reason though. I don't know. There's some reason why, I don't know. Like nobody really questioned it, which is the weird thing too.
Well, no, because
now I'm going to have to rewatch it again.
I have to too.
Oh.
I wouldn't mind again, actually.
Yeah.
But no, because like the reason I'm asking that and thinking about that is because there was the time where they thought he was, you know,
right.
possibly the thing. And then he was attacking stuff, but he never like, you never, you know, I don't think he ever took the test, and he never burned himself or anything. So, well, I don't know.
That's what Google is for.
Oh. Let's find out.
Let's see. He developed a rudimentary blood test, noting how MacReady realized that a creature's blood would attempt to. Okay, so he came up with it. That's fine.
The MacReady.
He used the blood test as a punishment for those who wronged him. That's a Reddit thing. Who got to the blood? That was another thing. I think we figured that out. Yes. Yeah, he didn't. Okay. Okay, so what if MacReady was really the thing in the end? Which I don't feel like he would have been. Why would he want to destroy his own people? But maybe he did.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, why would he want to destroy his own people? Just so he doesn't get caught finding out that he's actually still a thing. Like, they could have set it up.
Or maybe that thing is not complicit with the other things. I mean, maybe it's a dissident. It's like, no, I don't agree with what you're doing. I'm going to stop it now.
I don't know, but there is obviously my favorite line is probably the best line in the whole movie, which is, you know, and fuck you too. Yeah. you know, and so him attacking the thing at the end, you know, and blowing it up, and like an atom bomb type fucking explosion happens, which was a little over the top. I feel like I don't feel like it would have been that, but it was cool.
I don't know. I mean, that we're talking about a place that has, you know, gas and JMB would see for the whole winter. I mean, it may just go up like that.
Yeah. It's a pretty amazing explosion. I wonder, like, because they're doing it out in the middle of, like, I don't know where they did that particular scene, you know, if they did that somewhere out in the middle of like, you know.
No, okay, so here we go. He, the others are suspicious, but he starts by testing his own blood. But okay. The thing is, he's the one that created it. So, you know, yeah. Questionable. And then I also hear people ask, did MacReady live? No. The hell? There's no way. Like, even if it was the thing, it would have frozen.
Yeah.
Before anybody would have gotten to
it sort of like sets up where they're just like, him and Childs are just like, fuck it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, at this point, we're done. Yeah. You know, at least we got rid of
that.
At least we got rid of it, and it can't. Because, like, they got rid of its, one of my favorite things is they got rid of its, like, spaceship or whatever, you know, and all this other stuff. So they were like, you know, fuck this thing. Like, just.
Yeah, but I've always thought, but did they really get rid of it? And these are all things that, like, I guess a modern audience, we would be like, ooh, sequel material, like you said before. But I think it was just intentionally ambiguous. Because how do they know that they got everything? They don't.
Well, you know, John Carpenter hates sequels. Like, he did not want to do Halloween 2. Mm-hmm. You know, he just doesn't care.
At least not the way it was. He wanted to do an anthology.
He wanted to do an anthology, yeah. And then they did in Halloween 3, and that was amazing. I'm sorry. I don't give a fuck what people say. We're going to do Halloween 3 at some point, because everybody fucking rags on that movie, and I feel like it definitely deserves attention, you know. Especially since I would not watch it for years, and then, you know, I was like, all right, I'll finally watch it. I had the whole movies or whatever, I'll just put it on. I was like, why have I been watching this for years? It's like one of my favorites now. Like, I don't love it more than the first, but you know.
I never had a problem with it. I guess I don't know. I never had a problem with that, and never had a problem with Friday the 13th Part 5.
But you were always into like horror when you were a kid, right? Like, you since a kid.
Yeah but I mean, I never questioned it. It wasn't until the dreaded internet that I even found out that people had problems with those.
Yeah, but I'm guessing you probably know. Yeah, you never heard from your friends were never like, why do you like Halloween 3?
Ah. Right. They're just like, why are you watching a horror movie?
I got that a lot. I still get that a lot. Why do you like horror films? Well, why don't I like horror films? Why do you like romantic comedies? You know?
Yeah.
Because you like to be entertained. I like all sorts of genres. But horror is a lot of fun because, you know, it's just, it's a whole thing, you know, there's a whole world of different stuff going on. Actually, my former roommate and I were talking last night about the fact I got her very confused because she talks about how she likes all these true crime stuff. I'm like, how do you like true crime stuff, but you hate horror? You know, right? And she was like, what are you talking about? I was like, you hate horror. You know, she was like, yeah, they're not the same thing. I'm like, people get murdered in real life. This is scarier. You know, true crime is scarier because it's real. People can really do this
but
shit.
Maybe that's it. That's the appeal. I don't know. I've never really like delved into why people like true crime horror, but you know, I don't ever watch any of these movies and think, oh wow, I'm scared, or I have fear for this person or whatever. I mean, you know, I might feel like some tension and that kind of thing, but it's like, you watch true crime and you're like, you know, I think it's a boyfriend did it. I think that's a lot of what people are.
It's like a mystery.
It's a whodunit that's already been solved.
And then now they're just like, you know, bringing the audience into it.
Right. They can watch like a 2-hour show or listen to a podcast and make all of their, you know, all of their guesses like we do when we're watching a horror movie, but then at the end they still find out who did it. It's like, I knew that's who it was, you know?
Exactly. But I mean, Oh, it's just, to me, it's the same thing as horror. You know, it's like a, it's like Scream. It's like any of those, you know, it's just the difference is that there's more blood, you know, or something, you know, yeah. And true crime movies, they don't really show a lot.
I disagree. There's something there. Those are definitely two completely different things in my mind as well.
Okay.
Well, I don't know.
We can agree to disagree.
Right. And don't make her defend why she likes true crime and not horror, because you know what? We like what we like.
I know. But I'm sort of making her watch all these crappy horror movies more, you know.
Yeah.
So she's
the good ones.
The ones that I enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, she worked with Donald Farmer. She's used to, you know.
Oh, yeah. Don.
So anyway, to go back to, you know, all this shit, you know, like it with the thing, it is amazing that this movie was like, I really enjoy watching this film. Like it made me feel happy, actually, because it just it makes you feel like you're in this other like world in a way where all this stuff is happening and you kind of feel like you're there with them. You know,
right. A situation that most people, very, very, very few people would ever be in. Take away the thing stuff, just the actual just being in Antarctica in an outpost in the middle of winter. Like there are very few people in this world who can say they've done that. So it's like we get a little bit more of escapism there, that we get to go experience something that we are never going to experience.
Which they watch, like when they're in Antarctica doing these things or whatever, they watch the thing as like a,
yeah,
like, you know, they have a specific date or something. They watch the thing and eat dinner or have like feast, you know, and
well, everything. Yeah.
I'm like,
I mean, you go camping, you're gonna, you know, you want to watch Friday the 13th. You go to Antarctica, you're gonna watch the thing.
I mean, that's funny, but it's also kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that. You know, even like, I don't know if I'd want to watch Friday the 13th part 3 or 4 or whatever before I go camping, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm one of those people that when I was a kid, I fucking Friday the 13th scared me. Like it's one, yeah, of the few movies that actually did terrify me, and mainly because right outside is the woods. You know, so I always, mm-hmm, thought, oh man, like the idea that there could be somebody out in the woods killing people, whether it be Jason or just some random stranger out there doing it,
right,
just kind of terrified me as a kid of like, oh God, you know. And I think it was part 5 where they have the scene where he looks outside and he sees, you know, Jason or whatever. And that scene like freaked me out because I look outside my window and be like, man in a hockey mask just staring outside. So you know, I don't know how I'd feel if I were asked to go to Antarctica and they're like, let's watch the thing.
Like, well, yeah, I mean, I would.
I know you would.
I would not want to go to Antarctica, let me just set that out there. I would go in the springtime. It looks really, really very cool and I'd love to like see it, but yeah, wintertime,
it's too fucking cold, man.
No.
Now let's talk about this you know, this poster, right? Where it has, right, the stuff, whatever, the shining out of it, like the, it's, mm-hmm, coming out
like
of that
a, like the face is like kind of exploding with light.
Right. Why did they choose that? Like I get the this is what they wore a lot, you know, this outfit. You know, I saw a bunch of them wearing that, but I'm like, what was the deal with that?
I did read very briefly today that the poster, the person who made it did not know it really much about the movie, but yeah, they did like the poster, so they used it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, and so it was the 80s. If your movie and your poster matched up, the hell were you doing, you know?
Right.
Like,
I guess they don't.
It was a marketing thing.
It just looks cool. I get it. I'm just like thinking, I was looking at that going, I don't remember that being in the movie. Like,
yeah, I've never questioned that, but it, you know.
But, you know, we talked Puppet Master the last episode and Ghoulies, you know, they had the scene where the thing was popping up out of the toilet.
And right. And it's not even
No, they it is in it. They had to go back and actually put one scene of that in there.
Right, because they had already had it on the poster.
Right.
And we talked about Dolls, that Charles Band, they had the poster. And Charles Band really liked it. And Brian Usna said, okay, that's not where we're going with it, but that's going to be in the movie. Mm-hmm. Because we like this poster that was made before the movie was even determined. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, see, that's the thing. I guess back in the 80s, they did that a lot, where they would do the poster first, and then they would...
Well, that's what Friday the 13th was, just a name.
Yeah.
You know, it was a name, and they just took out an ad in Variety that just said Friday the 13th and something about the scariest movie ever made. And they had no idea what they were doing. I mean, it's all about marketing. And, you know, back then you could do stuff like that without people questioning it, without people being able to find things out.
Right.
Because of said internet. So
we talked about that a lot now, because it's so funny how back in the 80s, everything was so different, you know.
Yep.
It was I kind of feel like the internet has sort of ruined the film industry in some ways because of that, you know, because, you know, okay. So here's an example of something though. My friend Vincent posted on Facebook today earlier that I was watching The Thing, right? And I posted a picture of me in a chair saying I'm about to watch The Thing or whatever. And so my friend Vincent said that he went to, that got to see the movie when he was 9 years old in the theater. And it was like the first rated R movie, I guess, or something, or big movie, you know, and he got to see the movie, and maybe it was the first horror film he got to see in the theater. He got to see it, and he was like, that's the first time I realized the critics were wrong, you know?
Yes.
Because everybody had said, oh, the ratings are terrible, this is bad, you know, we're not going to go see it. And he was like, what are you talking about? This movie was amazing. You know, and so that's the other thing with the internet now, is like everybody can be a critic. So a movie can live or die just by so many people giving it a Rotten Tomato score. You know,
when it used to just be if Siskel and Ebert gave it 2 thumbs up or 2 thumbs down or a split, that was all we had to go on.
I know. I don't even know.
And Roger
why.
Ebert was a horrible critic. I'm sorry. He was terrible. He had no ability to separate his own personal beliefs and feelings from integrity of a film. He hated this movie. He called it like a barf bag movie or something like that. So there you go.
You know,
he actually made, I think he made a lot of movies popular. I know he did. He made a lot of movies popular by saying he didn't like it because they were offensive to him. Those are the movies I wanted to watch.
Have you seen his documentary about him, Life Itself?
Yeah.
I bought it on Blu-ray. I forgot. I think somebody had it. And Eric Sputik. I don't know if you know him, but Eric in California was like, hey, I've got these movies. And he showed me a bunch of them that he had. And do you want any? And I said, you know, this, this, and this. And one of them was Life Itself. So I bought it. And I watched it that night because I was so like intrigued. I love Siskel and Ebert especially, but I was hoping they'd dive a little bit more into Siskel and Ebert. They really just mainly concentrated on Ebert, you know, and everything. But it's wonderful, like just knowing like who he was and how important he sort of like that. You're right, like that was sort of the thing.
It was everything.
Like, yeah, my parents and I would watch it during lunch because it would come on at like 12 o'clock. So during lunch on Saturday or Sunday, I think it was, it would come out and the movies would already be out. So I'm like, or they're coming next week or something. And I would watch it and I would go, oh, okay. Like I'll believe this. Now I'm like, maybe I should watch all the movies I didn't watch because they didn't like it, you know. Maybe you know what I mean? Maybe I'd like those ones a little bit more.
There's a whole so Laser Blast is a terrible movie. And on Mystery Science Theater 3000, they do that. And at the very end, so they've got the Roger Ebert's book right? You know, like he would come out with a book where before the internet, where everything was rated, and he gave it like 1 star or 1.5 stars or 2 stars. That's right, 2 stars. So at the very end of the movie, they're going through and they're going, yes, so terms of endearment, 1.5 stars. Roger Ebert liked Laser Blast more than that. And they go through all these classic movies that he rated lower than Laser Blast.
All right, now I have to watch that.
I
have not actually seen the original Laser Blast yet. I know of it and everything, and I think it's Charlie Band produced it, yes, or whatever. So yeah, I've been wanting to see it. I think I saw it. I saw like the DVD or the Blu-ray on the Full Moon Cable, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just never bought it, but I should get the Blu-ray at some point. I wonder if the Mystery Science Theater 3000 is on that Blu-ray or not. I doubt it.
Probably not. But I watched that movie when I was young. It was on TV. And I remembered it because he's wearing the medallion thing and it like mm-hmm. burns into his chest and he ends up with like this stone in his chest and he goes to Roddy McDowall to get it taken out. And that
as you do
skeeved me out when I was a kid because he's just like, well, it's very close to the surface. I'm just going to rip it out. And I'm even getting the heebie-jeebies right now, even now when I watch it. And it's just latex and a little stone and a little bit of fake blood, but I still get the heebie-jeebies because it creeped me out when I was a kid.
Well, and just like the thing, it's wonderful when you sort of, like, as we talked about how John Carpenter, this was John Carpenter's first Hollywood movie, he was so used to low-budget films and some of the makeup effects, like for The Fog and for even Halloween, were amazing for that, you know, for that low budgetness, you know, and everything. And for them to make the, you know, to have The Thing have these amazing, you know, visual effects with the, or, you know, what is it?
Practical
effects with it. Cause no visual effects really, I don't think. Unless,
well, I think back then they would have called it visual effects. Now that means something different in our terminology most of the time.
Yeah, because now it means a more CGI-ish kind mm-hmm. of thing, I'm so glad this movie was practical. A movie like Laser Blast would, you know, those things, like, I mean, you look at that, you go, oh my God, that's amazing. You look at The Thing, you're like, oh my God, that's just a little step above, but it's still amazing, you know, like each, but it's just showing that John Carpenter is getting better and better with, you know, what he's able to do and accomplish, you know, with his eye. Sadly, he hasn't directed anything in forever, you know, and
takes baths in his money and produces now.
He just produces by name only, really. Like, yeah, he doesn't really, he usually, from what I've understood, he like mainly smokes pot and plays video games all day. And
you know what? More power to him.
I'm not dissing that at all. Like, I'm like, hey, yeah, you know what? Look, you've given us, you know, and if anybody's like, oh, I can't believe he's doing that, not giving us another movie, I'm like, he gave us a lot of fucking great.
Right.
He made more great movies than anybody could even make one great movie, you know, like,
yeah,
like that. So he, like, to me, he's, you know,
he doesn't owe us anything.
Yeah,
you know, he just doesn't. That's the thing. It's like actors, I mean, they're not public property. If they want to stop, they can stop.
Right. However, I will say he was the first celebrity I saw at a horror convention. So I was at Texas Frightmare Weekend, and it was my first horror convention ever. I was in Dallas, Texas. I'd never even gone to Texas before in my life. I was there to meet up with a friend of mine, and he was coming down to meet me in the lobby of the hotel. And as I walk in, the first person I see is John Carpenter being interviewed by somebody in a, and I knew him right then. Like, I saw him and I go, that's fucking John Carpenter. Holy shit. And then all of a sudden I see like Sid Haig and Bill Moseley talking to each other, and they walk right by me. And then I see Kane Hodder walking to the elevator. He's staring at me, giving me this, like, I'm going to kill you look. And he doesn't even know me. And I'm like, the fuck, where am I? And I was, I told Sid Haig that once before he passed away in an interview. I said, I felt like it was, I was in in Jurassic Park, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like the doors opened and here I am in like fucking horror park.
Like Westworld, but horror icons.
Right. And so I said that and he goes, you know what the difference between Jurassic Park and the horror movie conventions is? And I was like, no, I don't. And he goes, we're not allowed to kill you. He was like, it's in our contract. I was like, oh, nice. Man. But he was, see, that always made me like laugh with Sid. Sid was such mm-hmm. a nice, you know, but funny guy, and everything. So rest in peace, Sid. Sorry, mm-hmm. you know, you're no longer with us, but he gave us a lot of great stuff for years.
There's,
you know,
a lot of great stuff.
But yes, to go back to the thing, and John Carpenter, he's just been an idol of mine. Didn't get a chance to meet him when he was at Texas Frightmare. He just costs too much money. And yeah. I barely could afford to get Kane Hodder and Danielle Harris's autographs. That's who I, there's the only few people I wanted at my first convention, you know, and both were awesome, you know, great people, you know. And everybody at these horror conventions. So if you haven't gone to a horror convention, you're listening
yes.
to
80s back.
Horror. Yes. Back. Yes. I got so jealous this like past weekend. This is March, by the way, everybody, that we're recording this. And I saw the Monster Mania pictures mm-hmm. and I saw there's also like a 90s convention, and I'm really into 90s stuff, you know. So I was like, oh damn, like two amazing conventions, and I'm seeing people getting pictures with these, you know, these icons and, you know, and everything, and I'm just like, oh man, bummer. But I'll be back Scares I Care this year for sure. I don't know if I'll go to anything else this year or not, because I don't have the money at the moment, but we'll see, you know.
I've got some bucket list convention stuff coming up. Next weekend I'm going to Horror Hound in Cincinnati to actually be a guest panelist.
Nice.
To do filmmaking panels. So nice.
Who are you with?
Me.
Oh, is it just
I don't know. No. They're like, it's different filmmakers. I'm not sure who I'm on with, and I have two different panels, so it'll be different people. And then the weekend after that, I'm going to Cinema Wasteland because they have two movies screening where I'm the lead.
Oh, which ones? So,
Karis Hell the Second and nice. Holy I think Shit I saw Man.
Oh, that's finally getting okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if it was out yet or not.
Yep, we're making the rounds. So
awesome. Well, I'm excited for that. And I'm excited for that to come out because I know that's been something that's been in the works for so long. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I know everybody in it. So like, you know, it's the funny yeah. thing about the, you know, world of like low budget filmmaking is like, you know, everybody or whatever.
Yeah. You can know? Watch movies and be like, oh, that's, I know that person. Or like, I'm scrolling through Tubi and be like, hey, that's me. You know, like, it's awesome. I love it.
Scrolling through Tubi and you're like, I know everybody in every like low budget movie that's out here.
Yeah,
like it's insane. But great. I love
good
like,
times.
Tubi, the thing is on Tubi, by the way. I did yes. not, like I said, I did not watch it on Tubi. I watched it on my Blu-ray mainly because I don't want to sit around for the commercials if I don't have to. And I'm not paying for Tubi. That just sounds ridiculous. You know, I think you can pay, I think you could pay like $5 a month or something to get like non-commercials, but I'm like, yeah, I'm okay with the commercials. It's, you know,
bathroom breaks.
Yeah. Or just whatever, you know, go out, mm-hmm. grab some soda or whatever. But yeah, it's on Tubi. So if anybody has not seen it, I don't know why you listen to our whole podcast, because you know, we spoiled the hey, shit out of this movie.
Get a life.
we don't do our show. I just realized we don't do our show kind of like the typical indie film cafe one where we talk about the story, we talk about whatever. Yeah, we kind of do it a little bit differently.
It's very much a free for all, just kind of brain dump, you know, no structure, which yeah, structure. I dig. You know, yeah, there's time for structure and there's time for chaos.
Yeah.
These were a time for chaos.
It's funny. I am structured. Like, I like my stuff having schedules and I like doing all that stuff and everything. But I, when it comes to the podcast, I prefer to be like free for all, because it's just, to me, you get too many of the same shows where they're all they're talking about is, you know, the way, you know, like, we're going to do it this way and we're going to do it like this way each time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's boring after a while. It's like.
And the fact of the matter is that we pick movies that generally you're only going to listen to this podcast if you've seen it. So we're not going to go beat by beat in a.
Uh-oh. Are you there? Wow. At the end of the podcast, this happens. Rebecca, are you still there? Oh no. Well, everybody, we're gonna up. Oh, why? Oh,
there
we
okay, go.
Now there we go. It, for some reason, it was doing really well until like the end, you know.
And then yeah, it's like you just froze for a minute.
I know.
He's infected. The thing's got him.
Well, I mean, it does look like it does. The head of the. Of the spider. So you can't see this because this is podcast unless we do the video, but I am literally the head of the spider, which was probably my favorite effect in the whole movie, was the little spider that, you mm-hmm. know, came out and everything. They're like, I think, what did they say? Like, they looked over like, oh fuck, you know?
Yeah. Like, it's just like the this, head is like, they're like, and then okay,
that's just, we got to torch it, you know?
Yeah. Like, we're doomed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many of these things were there. It wasn't just one thing, so there were a bunch of the things, right?
There were.
All right. Well,
and if we are counting things, I will give this 5 out of 5 things, not surprisingly.
Oh yeah. Oh, so we're doing fives, right? Up to 5.
I think so.
I think so. I don't know. Have we?
I do too many podcasts. I can't remember how I rate. It's a 5 out of 5 or a 10 out of 10, whatever.
Let's just say 5 out of 5 for this one.
Yeah.
And if we weren't doing it that way the last few times.
That's what we're doing now.
We're doing it now. So it's officially 5 out of 5, or,
yeah,
you know, or 1 out of 5 or whatever. I will give it a 5 out of 5 as well. It is. I think it's, I mean, obviously no film is perfect, but I think this is near perfect. Mm-hmm. So I think it's one of those films that I, like I said, each time I watch it, it gets better and better. And I think I pick up more stuff the next time than I did the first time, because there's a lot that happens in the movie. It's an hour and 48 minutes. So there's like a lot that happens in the movie, but it's still just fun. It's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And, there's nothing wrong with it. Like I said, I think The Fog is up there too with a 5 out of 5 as well for me. So if we ever did that one, like most of his older stuff, like Prince of Darkness is probably the same way. Like, I love his films, period, you know? So I feel like more people should watch this if they don't, you know, Halloween, the original. So I don't think John Carpenter's made a, you know, didn't start making bad movies till like Ghost of Mars or mm-hmm. whatever, you know.
I knew that's the one you were gonna say.
Well, because it's like, it's the one that, yeah, I think really sort of started to show he sort of just didn't care anymore. I think, like, I think he mm-hmm. He was done, you know. He did, you know.
Yeah,
it probably drains you doing so many good
movies. Oh yeah. Yeah, the expectation levels gotta be like crushing.
Yeah. And I mean, sure, he's probably made some bad movies. Like, I know he did the Elvis movie, I think. And I don't think it's terrible, but I don't think it's a John Carpenter film, you know?
Yeah.
He did Memoirs of an Invisible Man, which I think is, if I remember correctly, I saw it in the theater and I thought it was okay, you know? But I don't think of it as like, oh, that was a John Carpenter film, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, so I feel like he just, after a while, I think toward the 90s, he sort of was like, look, I gave you guys a string of like amazing films. Mm-hmm. And now I'm just sort of going to have fun and do whatever I want to fucking do.
Which, more power to you, John.
Yeah.
Because you're not listening, but if you were.
Maybe he is. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah. He might be wanting to see what other people think of the thing. I don't know. You never know who's listening these days. You know, I might tag him in a tweet, you know, and I think he's on Twitter. But I'll tag him and say, hey, check this out if you get bored, you know. You know what I mean? Because like that's literally why he probably listened to it. He'd be like, I'm bored. Let's see. Oh, this guy tweeted his podcast to me.
Never know.
Sure, I'll watch it. I'll listen to it. You know. They're praising me enough. I'll just sit back.
Yeah, they're kissing my ass. So yeah.
Yeah. The worst people to be kissing their asses for. So
yeah.
Well, anyway, right. next month we have one I'm going to be doing, and I have decided I'm going to be doing Blood Hook.
Which I love. So well, if you have not seen that, that is one that a lot of people have not heard of. So if you've not seen that, here's your like forewarning, watch it before we do our podcast. It. Go watch it and then listen to our podcast in April.
I also did a review of it. For the Indie Film Cafe's YouTube, and it was for Blu-ray Hunter, I think, or something. And I reviewed that by myself. And, you know, so this will be more interesting. It'll be fun to re-watch it because I hadn't seen it since 2020. So it'll be fun to kind of re-watch and check out. And I remember loving it, like absolutely thinking it was batshit nuts. And I love that. So it's a little bit different than The Thing, but my stuff's going to be a little bit more silly and goofy and kind of.
Hey, more, we're mixing it up.
Yeah, I mean, we can't all be the same thing every. God, why am I? We said thing. Like, there's a drinking game. How many times you said thing?
Say thing.
I started thing. Noticing that.
Yeah,
I was doing it, and I was just like, you know, like it felt weird saying the movie's title while we're just, and even you, I noticed you saying it.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh my goodness, it's, you know, there's, you'll be like, the thing is,
right?
And I'll be like,
it's pretty well used words.
So. I know. Well, you know, it's, there you go. By the way, I will say this. For the longest time, when you looked up The Thing on IMDb, it would be the first thing that pops up. However, it is not anymore. It is not the first thing that pops up. The Thing About Pam is the first thing to pop up.
Oh.
It's yeah. it's a new movie or TV show on Peacock or something. Yeah. But anyway, the point is like it beat it. And I'm like, just because it's like new and
well, you know, maybe it's just a temporary thing anyway. It probably goes by like who's searching for it, you know, how many people.
It's a temporary
thing. That kind of thing. Yeah. It's a temporary thing. Okay. Oh my God. The thing is, we need to get this show done. So, guys, we will talk to you next time.
When we have something else to talk about.
God.
See, I'm just saying, there's just like, oh, it's going to have to keep saying it. Oh, Lord.
No. All right, guys. Thanks
Thank
for listening.
Thank you guys for checking this out. And join us next month for a brand new episode of 80s Horror Films. All right. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
You're running it, so your turn.
Oh, I am.
Yeah, it's your movie you pick.